The Allegheny Front is out and about this week to bring you new voices in today's environmental discussions. We're with refugee families dealing with really cold weather in our region, on the train line stretching across Pennsylvania, and among environmentalists watching the State of the Union address. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Thanks for joining me on the Allegheny Front. Today, we also make a pit stop to an enterprise helping turn cooking oil into diesel fuel. It smells...
not good.
It's not terrible. It's kind of like an auto garage. The smells, the scenes, the sounds of your region's environment. Please stay tuned to the Allegheny Front. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Imagine never having seen snow and then being dropped into a world covered with it. Or coming from a country with flatlands and taking a plane to a region of mountains. Or having to leave your family farm for another country because the land's no longer suitable for growing. For the up to 80,000 refugees that come to America each year, these are some of the challenges and opportunities faced. The Allegheny Front's Ashley Murray is stepping into our region's new immigrant communities to bring you an occasional series of stories we're calling A New Natural World. In a moment, we're going to visit one newly arrived family who may have felt a little chillier than the rest of us recently. But first, Ashley joins me to discuss the series. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you.
Ashley, you worked for 3 years with the Greater Pittsburgh Literacy Council, and you came in contact with a number of people learning English as a second language. I've heard a lot about the challenges of immigrants adjusting to a new culture. You and I were talking before even the idea of using an alarm clock for the first time.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like we hear a lot about adapting to a new climate, a new topography, new wildlife. What were some of the things you heard over time from people about arriving in the city for the first time?
So when I did teach English, I often had to test English levels. And one of the questions that was compulsory was, so what do you think about Pittsburgh? And without fail, a lot of my Asian students would say, I love the nature here, I love the clean air, and with last week's report about Beijing's air quality
right.
through the roof,
yes.
It just makes it extra poignant.
Well, it makes sense why you're hearing that, yeah.
Yeah. And so now that I've, you know, been doing these stories and really getting out in the community, I've talked to a Mexican immigrant who told me when he moved here, he was just so freezing. And then I talked to a Somali Bantu group that, you know, when they were in Somalia, they were basically an agrarian society, farming, using the land. And they're hoping now to, you know, use some land in Pittsburgh and set up community gardens. And really just experiencing the snow. Some older generations from Bhutan said that they had actually seen snow in the mountain region in Bhutan, but that the texture here was different. Mm-hmm. The snow was heavier or wet here, and it was more of a sandy texture there. So those are some of the differences that I'm hearing, the comparisons. And then I hear similarities. There's some Bhutanese refugees, they're ethnic Nepalis, but they're here and they say that they like the topography of Pittsburgh. And so they tell their friends who've been settled in other cities, and there's a whole secondary way of coming here.
We're hoping through this series to kind of expose the listening community to ideas and experiences they might not have known about, learning about a different country. Say more about that.
So I imagine that in the future, we will have generations and generations of maybe Nepalese people
sure.
or Mexican immigrants who came here, you know, a decade ago. And so I want to capture this new sense, like, wow, it's still new in the city.
New set of eyes on where
yes,
we live.
On where we live. And I want listeners to be able to hear it now. And so perhaps in the future, people could go back and hear the archives of how people were experiencing the weather here, the topography here, compared to where they came from.
There's a term that's been coined in the last few years, I guess, called environmental or climate refugees. Now, these are people leaving their homelands because of natural disasters that could be attributed to climate change. You came across some information about this.
Yeah, so it's not legally recognized. If you have to move from an environmental disaster or from an effect of climate change like drought or soil erosion, salinization of your soil, you can't grow crops anymore, and you move across the border or even within your own country, you're not recognized as a refugee. I think the closest that we came to that was when President Obama gave a temporary protection status to those who stayed in the U.S. after the Haitian earthquake, or after the earthquake in Haiti. And I know now that Norway and Switzerland are doing a push for recognition of environmental refugees, but there are projections that possibly by 2050, there will be 150 million environmental refugees worldwide.
And we do know, of course, some of these third world countries are really suffering, while it's us in the first world putting out a lot of the emissions and lending to the climate issues.
Yeah, and I was thinking today that, you know, we may even have some environmental refugees here in the U.S. I mean, think of Sandy, Katrina. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would be something interesting to look at. I'm looking right now really to find a voice in Pittsburgh of someone who came from another country or another region of the world and landed in Pittsburgh because of environmental degradation in their home country. I want to really record their story.
How can people reach you if they are able to help with the stories?
So people can reach me through the Allegheny Front. They can email ideas to info@alleghenyfront.org. I'm also on Twitter at Ashley_Murray. Or they could contact the Allegheny Front on the Facebook page.
Thanks so much.
No problem. Thank you.
And now the Allegheny Front's first story in our new Natural World series. People who resettle in Pittsburgh come from all over the world, places like Iraq, Sudan, and Somalia, to name a few. Recently, Ashley Murray, who we just spoke with, visited with Bhutanese refugees, experiencing a Pittsburgh winter for the first time, and she learned about some steps agencies are taking to keep the new arrivals comfortable.
My name is Marie, and I'm with Jewish Family and Children's Service. Today we're going to just talk about weatherizing your home.
Marie Gagnon is an intern at Jewish Family and Children's Services. She makes sure that when families arrive, they're prepared for Western Pennsylvania weather. Right now, she's working with a Nepalese family of eight.
So next what we'll do is take the plastic. And we're going to measure it next to the window.
The importance of weatherization for a lot of our families is to really help them save money on their heating bills. It's a concept that is actually foreign to most Americans, not just refugees or immigrants. And for many families, especially in the Pittsburgh area where the homes aren't as well insulated or older, it's really important that they learn how to protect and do the best they can.
Refugees frequently find themselves in older housing stock. It's all the newly arrived can often afford.
We want to make sure, doll, that we smooth out the sides.
As Gagnon speaks, 24-year-old Meg Kodka holds the hairdryer to seal the plastic around the windows. The rest of the family, including grandparents to toddlers, watch intently.
So as you can see, you want to hold it closely, but not too closely to the plastic.
These refugees arrived from Bhutan just 3 months ago. Meg and his family come from a line of Lochampas, people of the south, ethnic Nepalese who settled in southern Bhutan in the late 1800s. In the 1980s, they were told that their culture was no longer welcome in Bhutan. When the Lochampas protested, they were pushed out, becoming refugees. Dal Pudal of Jewish Family and Children's Services translates for Meg Kodka, who spent most of his life in tropical southeastern Nepal in a refugee camp. There, the temperatures went from 60 degrees to 90 degrees. That's it. He explains the contrast to his new home.
I was seeing the snow in a movie only. When I saw the snow in the air, I feel very surprised.
It was the same for his aunt Mina.
Was this your first time seeing snow?
Yes.
We see people coming in flip-flops, and we instantly get coats on them. We try to get them shoes. But it's sometimes a hard habit to break.
That's Leslie Eisenman from Jewish Family and Children's Services. Traditional wear for women in Nepal is a light lungi or something similar to a sari. Even now in Pittsburgh, older generations still wear this traditional outfit. But of course, it's now under a puffy winter coat. According to Vibrant Pittsburgh, a welcome center for immigrants and internationals, Nearly 800 of the 1,000 refugees that arrived in the greater Pittsburgh area since 2008 have been from Bhutan.
While total numbers don't compare to some cities like San Diego, maybe, it's just the growth within our own city that's been tremendous.
Eisenman says that each year, once the frost begins to bite, community organizations pull resources together, giving scarves, hats, and coats to those in this new natural world. As for the rest of this winter, Gagnon continues to do her part, putting plastic on the windows, turning thermostats down, and the homes of new arrivals.
You guys did the best job of all my weatherization projects that I've done this year. You guys did really good.
Reporting from a cozier house in Pittsburgh's South Hills, I'm Ashley Murray for the Allegheny Front.
That was the first installment in reporter Ashley Murray's occasional series for the Allegheny Front. It's called A New Natural World. To see photos of the Kodka family, please go to alleghenyfront.org. And to take us out, we bring you a popular Nepalese folk song called Resam Firiri.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Center for Environmental Research and Education at Duquesne University, now celebrating 20 years of preparing environmental professionals. The center provides multidisciplinary education for careers in environmental science and management with opportunities for research and internships. Programs include a BS in Environmental Science, Master's in Environmental Science and Management, and professional certificate programs. More information on the Center for Environmental Research and Education at 412-396-4749 or duq.edu/ESM.
Do you want to learn about reusing oil for fuel? Or maybe you want to know about the newest cars running on hybrid power or natural gas? Please join the Allegheny Front Pit Crew Saturday, February 23rd for a green gathering focused on alternatively fueled vehicles. We'll rev up at 10:30 with refreshments and car-inspired music. Experts will be there to answer your questions. Get on board by going to alleghenyfront.org. And we'll have more about transportation later in today's show as we hear from riders on a threatened Amtrak line.
We're both strong environmental advocates, so it's an obvious choice. We had a line that used to go all the way to Youngstown, Ohio, and they took that one out, and that was bad enough.
That's coming up on the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Please stay tuned. It's sexy in the world of environmental topics to talk about sustainable foods and local ingredients in restaurants, but what about the back end of food production, specifically the waste oil left behind from our love for fried foods? Can that part of the food cycle be made more sustainable? GTEC, which is short for Growth Through Energy and Community Health, is a Pittsburgh nonprofit. They collect waste oil to convert into biodiesel in their program called Refuel, and I'm with Sarah Inamorato at GTEC to learn more. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how's it going?
You're opening the magical shed.
I am. This is where all the magic happens. It's where we take all of our grease that we collect from the local restaurants and dump it into giant 55-gallon drums. These are the big plastic cubes that we ask restaurants to empty out their fryer oil in, and then we take them and dump them in those big drums right over there.
Good. So it smells. It smells.
Not good.
It's not terrible. It's kind of like a auto garage. There's a lot of different kind of colors of oil here.
Well, there are varying degrees of oil and different qualities. So if you have something where soap gets into the fryer, then that oil isn't necessarily something that can be converted into a fuel. You have hydrogenized, unhydrogenized animal fats, things like that. So there's all different varying qualities of oil. So we kind of have to lay them all out and see what we can use and what we can't.
So this truck, just a regular pickup truck, goes out, collects the oil. Mm-hmm. You bring it back here, and then where does it go from there?
We have a partnership with Braddock-based Fossil-Free Fuel, and they have a pickup truck that kind of looks like ours, except it has a giant sucker pump on the back, and they use that vacuum to suck up the oil that we have collected, and they take it back to their office, and that's where it gets cleaned and filtered and then distributed as a biofuel.
How long has GTEC been working on this?
And the program started back in 2010. Since then, we've collected about 10,000 gallons just in our little pickup truck.
And this runs on the fuel that is converted from this cooking oil.
That's correct. It is diesel powered, so we do fill it with 20% biodiesel. And then there's another tank that you can see in the back, and that is actually...
Can we get closer?
Absolutely. This actually gets filled with the vegetable oil. So you need... you have biodiesel, which is it has an extra chemical reaction that needs to happen for it to run in a traditional engine. This is completely retrofitted, so it's a completely different system that can take on straight vegetable oil.
And another thing I understand people can do is drop off their oil. I see some smaller containers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have three drop-off sites in various communities.
Your organization is a nonprofit, and you're working with Fossil Free Fuels, which is a for-profit. Do you make money off this? Is this something that can ever be really viable in society?
That is a great question, and it's something that we do. We look at frequently. I mean, we've seen Fossil Free Fuel as an enterprise, you know, survive, and it's just like any kind of business that's rooted in social good. You know, there's not a huge profit margin. But what we really do is, outside of the big oil companies or the big companies that are collecting this waste oil, we're trying to create a fuel economy that's Pittsburgh-based strictly. So you have restaurants that are producing the oil, and then, you know, we collect it, and then it gets processed locally and gets fuels local vehicles instead of having to mine for oil, then send it off to be refined, then have that refined oil sent back and then shipped to various outlets, and then fuels our cars. You know, we make the cycle much shorter. So with that being said, there's not a huge profit margin. That's why a lot of our work is funded through grants that we do, and also why we tend to collect from smaller oil producers, festivals, fish fries, because these people wouldn't traditionally have an outlet to recycle their oil.
We'll see you guys out at the fish fries.
Yeah.
In the next couple months.
Thanks.
Thank you for speaking with me.
Yeah, thank you.
Been speaking with Sarah Enamorado of GTEC, that is Growth Through Energy and Community Health here in Pittsburgh. They have a program called Refuel. They collect waste oil to convert into biodiesel, and they'll be part of our upcoming event, a green gathering focused on greener driving options. That's Saturday, February 23rd at Baum Boulevard Automotive. You can go to AlleghenyFront.org to find out more information. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. This is the Allegheny Front. President Obama spent about 10% of the State of the Union, about 600 words, discussing energy, climate change, and fuel efficiency in his first State of the Union address this term. Here's perhaps the most pointed part of what we heard on Tuesday.
We can choose to believe that Superstorm Sandy and the most severe drought in decades and the worst wildfires some states have ever seen were all just a freak coincidence. Or we can choose to believe in the overwhelming judgment of science and act before it's too late.
I went to a Sierra Club watch party for the speech, where about a half dozen activists were gathered. Our news analyst Anne Murray stayed home and watched. Here we are, comparing notes, Anne.
Hi, Jennifer.
What did you make of this statement?
This is probably the first time in a major address he connected the dots and connected global climate change with science. And he also framed it in terms of real extreme weather. And it was a real call to people who don't believe that climate change is man-made. How did the folks with the Sierra Club react?
There's a retiree there, Barbara Grover, chair of the Sierra Club's Allegheny Group. I'd like to play you what she said.
I would have liked him to emphasize the climate change more, because I think that's really one of the, that is the biggest issue that we have to face. If we can't solve that one, we're not here anymore.
Overall, Ms. Grover said that she was happy with the speech, and so was Randy Francisco. He's the lead organizer of the local Sierra Club. He was happy that you didn't hear anything about coal in this speech. And you noticed that too, didn't you, Anne?
Yeah, it was very absent. But I think that a lot of people in the industry might be happy that Mr. Obama didn't mention coal either, in light of the fact that one of his big playing cards is the Clean Air Act. And under the Clean Air Act, the Supreme Court has ruled that the Environmental Protection Agency can regulate carbon and other greenhouse gases in future power plants, but the EPA could also regulate existing plants and other industrial polluters, and a lot of energy experts agree that many of the older coal-fired power plants won't make the standard.
Obama had some kind of tough words and a tough look, I think, at the members of the Congress, but he wasn't really specific on what would happen after the speech.
Yeah, he sort of gave an ultimatum to Congress and said, if I want the Congress, I call upon the Congress to go with a bipartisan market-based solution to carbon, to CO2 emissions. And that pretty much means cap and trade, at least putting a price on carbon. And environmentalists, even people in the industry, said that's a pretty good idea to know where we stand by putting a price on CO2 emissions. It also allows the United States to work with other countries in a bigger carbon market. But it's pretty much agreed that that's not going to happen. President Obama tried that with Congress in his first term. It made it through the House of Representatives, but the Senate didn't pass it. So probably the ball's going to be in the executive branch's court.
One of the items of particular local interest that the president talked about, natural gas.
Yeah, he, excuse my pun, gushed about natural gas. Sorry. Let's listen to a quote, what he said.
We produce more natural gas than ever before, and nearly everyone's energy bill is lower because of it. And over the last 4 years, our emissions of the dangerous carbon pollution that threatens our planet have actually fallen. But for the sake of our children and our future, we must do more to combat climate change.
And that is true, that the carbon emissions in the United States have gone down. And some of that is because natural gas is replacing coal as part of the energy mix with power plants.
Is your gas bill lower?
Making a comparison to a couple of years ago, it is lower.
Significant?
Yeah. But the question is, will gas remain low? Will there be a big supply? And of course, one of the questions is, will gas be sold out of the country, making the supply smaller and gas bills could go up? And also, Mr. Obama talked about the fact that, yeah, gas is cleaner, but it's still a fossil fuel, and we need to clean natural gas up. We need to make it a cleaner fuel, and we also need to expand our alternative energy sources. And ironically, he wants to use the money that the federal government makes from drilling for oil and gas on federal lands to do more research about natural gas, do more research and expand alternative energies. So again, he has to call on Congress, because those monies are federal monies. The Congress would have to weigh in on any type of transaction, any type of money that would subsidize that kind of research. So back to Congress.
Thanks very much, Anne.
Well, thanks.
To read an extended version of Anne Murray's news analysis, please go to AlleghenyFront.org.
Also, in his State of the Union address, President Obama touted the economic benefits of having a sound infrastructure that includes high-speed trains. Rail travel is considered the most efficient mode of transportation, leaving a smaller carbon footprint per passenger than either plane or car. Pennsylvania faces losing its Harrisburg to Pittsburgh line if the state decides not to pick up the nearly $6 million a year TAB starting in October. The Allegheny Front's Ashley Murray rode the rails to find out what riders are saying.
I'm on Amtrak's Pennsylvania line. We rolled out of Pittsburgh about 30 minutes ago, and the train is still pretty quiet. Mostly people are sleeping or reading.
My name is Linda Ferguson, and I'm traveling with my niece on the train to my son's house for my grandson's third birthday. I like to take the train because it's less stressful. It's energy efficient. It costs me less than driving my car. I'm a retired elementary teacher, and I taught science. And I was very interested in environmental things for my students. One of the reasons I quit teaching because they tore out the woods and put a Lowe's right behind my building. You know, I thought, gee, I spent 34 years teaching habitat protection.
The only way you see my crew at Lewistown. Lewistown is station stop.
My name is David Holzbar. I'm a junior high college student, and the train is very convenient for me. It's right down the street from where the college is, and I think it's more economically friendly because instead of having one car, you're having a train with numerous people on it.
And what do you study?
I study marketing, and I'm minoring in communications.
I live in New York. I don't have a car. My folks live on the Huntington line. In Huntington, so it's convenient. When I first started living in New York 16 years ago, there were two trains that stopped in Huntington, and I forget how long ago, but they cut it down to just the one that goes to Pittsburgh. And now that they're talking about cutting that, it's just heartbreaking.
Stop Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Harrisburg will be next.
I'm Jean Engel from Youngstown, Ohio.
And I'm Margaret Rule from Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are sisters.
I took the train from Pittsburgh to visit with Margie for a week. I've just recently retired, and this has been in our plans for years, that we would go back and forth across Pennsylvania. We're both strong environmental advocates, so it's an obvious choice. We had a line that used to go all the way to Youngstown, Ohio, and they took that one out. And that was bad enough, so now I have to get a ride to Pittsburgh at odd hours, but better than, you know, the alternative.
Better than getting picked up in Harrisburg, say.
Exactly, right.
So it's been a long day of train travel. Most people I talked to today really expressed the fact that they take the train because it's more convenient, they don't want the wear and tear on their car, they don't want to pay the turnpike tolls, or they are conscious of the fact that taking the train is the more environmentally friendly way to go. We'll see what happens as the news continues on the Pennsylvania Amtrak route. But for now, reporting from the train, I'm Ashley Murray for the Allegheny Front.
Among the voices you heard in that piece was that of Brent Burkett of New York City. Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. Please get aboard our train by following us on Twitter at Allegheny Front and going to our Facebook page. Our website is AlleghenyFront.org. Kathy Nauer is the executive producer of the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Janelle Pfeiffer is the production director and social media strategist. Join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is supported by the Heinz Endowments, the Remmel Foundation, administered by PNC Charitable Trusts, the Laurel Foundation, and the A.D. and J.W. Wilson Fund of the Pittsburgh Foundation.